Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 25 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Patty Flint, a relative of Big X. So welcome.
How you
back
doing, Rob?
To the show, Patty.
How's it going? Glad to be back.
Going great, going great. We're in the middle of a little battle here, but we're gonna try and figure out how to finish this off properly.
Keep your head down.
Yeah, probably. That's probably the best advice. Yeah, I think so. That's whenever being in these types of situations, I think that it doesn't matter who you are. I think that's what you should say.
Absolutely. The shorter you are, the better you are in this, I would have thought.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Because you know, you might be able to crouch very well. So who knows?
True.
All right. So episode 25 begins with Buck giving an order and ends with the men feasting. So we ended things yesterday in the middle of the battle where they are on their way to assault the third 105s. They, yes. You know, everyone thought they were 88s, but they're really 105s. Buck screams to Malarkey, "Go to the cannon, go!" And he lays down cover fire and starts shooting. And, they reach the battery and just start mowing down the Germans that are there.
They do. In the previous episode, they were running low on ammo. Buck had enough ammo to shoot a dead guy in this one, as we see, because the guy is quite clearly lying on the ground after being shot multiple times.
Yes.
And gets another volley just for good measure.
Exactly. I mean, the book also talks about the fact that they were much more brutal than they probably should have been. The men said it also had to do with the fact that this was their first battle, and they were just very bloodthirsty, especially Garnier. This is his first opportunity to find ways to avenge the fact that his brother had died.
That's right. Yeah, in Monte Cassino.
That's right. You know, Buck then motions to Winters that they've taken over the battery. Winters gets ready to start moving forward to go reach there, and then as he's running through the trench, he notices Hall's dead body on the ground.
Yes. Now, okay. Is he running, Rob? Is he running through with the TNT in his other arm there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got the TNT there. He got the TNT, and he also has a few pedometers because you need that also. You need to, if you
absolutely.
You need to find a way to make the explosion go boom.
Yes.
He takes a second to just look at the hole, and they give us also the shot. Seeing the dead hole, he crouches down to look down the hole. It shows that Winters, at least the character of Winters, is very humane here. Yes. Feels for Hall, and he brushes away some flies that are already starting to land upon the corpse. It's quite gruesome, but on the other hand, it still shows the humanity of the moment.
Certainly, because this is his first loss in combat.
That's right.
He's actually seen, viscerally, almost eye to eye, as it would be. Where,
correct.
He's had his former boss's plane go down. They don't know anything about it. They don't know where anyone is.
Could just nobody knows where Mian is. Right, but
Mian, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
So this is the first time he's seen someone that he knows that isn't the enemy. I mean, he's shot enemy already.
He did just meet him because Hall is not one of the men in Easy Company. He's from Able Company. But
he landed on D-Day with Winters because they ended up going through the woods.
Right. I mean, again, as we mentioned yesterday, that's completely a fictional account of what they added here. It is possible that Well, let's put it that way. It's not in the book, but it is possible
No.
that during the interviews with Winters before they made this miniseries, maybe when the writer was sitting down with him and he talked about Hull and he said, "Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that Hull and I, were together through the night of D-Day." It is possible that that came up or whatever.
Yeah, but it does show the humanity, as you say. I mean, that's the one thing I wrote down in my notes there was cares enough to chase away flies and humanity. So it's
Yeah.
and you I imagine it's one of the things that may have affected him later on down the line.
I mean, it makes sense. When you look at it from that perspective.
Absolutely.
And at this point, we get a shot of Lipton, crawling through the grass, trying to get to where he needs to, get the next battery.
Yes.
The whole thing. It's very interesting what the this thing that happens, because a soldier crawls up next to him and goes, "Hey, Sarge," he goes, "I'm looking for battalion headquarters." And Lipton goes, "Are you kidding? It's back that-a-way." And what's really, really, I guess, gruesome is the fact that the guy just raises up his head a little bit and says, "You mean over?" And then he gets shot in the head.
It does. Straight through the
Straight through the helmet.
straight and straight through the identifier, the big white patch that identifies who he is or what unit he's from by that the Ace of Spades or whatever it is. If you go back through the exit is straight through that, which is I always wondered whether these identifying markers were actually really big targets on people's heads, really big bullseyes. Because you see, as he turns, it goes directly right through there.
Right. I mean, the book does talk about it. That soldier, his name is Warrant Officer Andrew Hill. So
Okay.
the book has a little bit here. It talks about that after Lipton slapped the bandage on Wynn's butt. So he says Wynn continued to apologize for goofing off. Warrant Officer Andrew Hill from Regimental Headquarters came up behind Lipton. "Where's Regimental HQ?" he shouted. You see, again, he asked for the regiment, not the battalion, but whatever. And then
Yeah.
Lipton goes back that way, said, pointing to the rear. Hill raised his head to look. A bullet hit him in the forehead and came out behind his ear, killing him instantly. So again, it's just amazing the way that they're able to incorporate so much truth in everything that's going on here.
Yes.
Here you have one sentence in the book, and they show it to us.
They
They
do.
show us, because like you would say to yourself, this is absurd. Why would there be someone there who's asking a question, where's the headquarters? Stuff like that. But unfortunately, it really did happen, and this guy really was shot in the head,
It
just
did.
because he was, I guess, in the wrong place at the wrong time, type of thing,
Yeah, and
from that
so
perspective.
as far as my knowledge of the battleground was, or the location, the guns were as they were in the movie here, or in the series here, they were hidden in the tree line around what was already a ditch around the field. But then on the opposite side of the field, there were three MG42 laid out, three positions dug in, and they were cutting that field to ribbons and the field behind the guns too, because they had such a good vantage point. So not only were they trying to take out the guns, they were also concerning themselves with the MG42s that were at the other side of the field. That's a lot to take in. But yeah, and then the fact that Lipton just sort of watches the guy go down and then think, well, on with the mission.
Well, again, when you're under fire, that's what you got to do.
Absolutely.
You can't hesitate and start thinking about yourself at that point. You're just going to move forward, and that's it. And then we get a shot of Winters jumping into a trench, and he goes inside of one of the I guess posts within the trench, and he sees a whole bunch of documents, and he starts flipping through the documents, trying to to look at them, and he sees the Nazi seals on it and stuff like that, and he just takes it and puts it in his puts it in his shirt in order to try and keep the stuff there.
He does. Taking your opportunity to gather intelligence.
That's right. And then Lipton finally shows up near Garnier, and he goes, TNT, TNT. He goes, don't need it. What? Don't need it.
Don't need it.
And Lipton's like, what? I finally went and brought it. And then he points to the gun barrel, and that you see that was completely in shambles, from absolutely. Everything that's. And then he says, Hall? And he goes, Hall? He goes, where'd he come from?
Yeah.
Hall was the guy who had the TNT.
Yes. I had to take a stop and take a beat when I was watching Bill Garnier shooting, because the Thompson works differently than any other weapon I'd seen. So I'm very much used to the bolt going being at the front, and then when you fire the round, the bolt comes all the way back and all the way forward again. Right. However, it works very differently with the Thompson. The bolt's at the back, and then when it's empty, it goes to the front, which is very bizarre for me. But I actually, knowing you as I know you, Rob, I thought I better go and investigate this just in case he asks. So I sat and watched loads of videos on Thompsons, and I sat and thought to myself,
I thought you were going to say you went to a range to go shoot a Thompson in order to get real experience.
That's something in the UK you can't really get the opportunity to do.
They don't have gun ranges that you can go to?
Not so much, no. And the caliber of the weapons would, you can go with an air rifle, what you would essentially classify as a BB gun, or a 177 or a 22 air rifle. But the laws here are very, very strict on gun ownership, which is fair enough.
I understand. In my country, it's slightly different.
Yes.
Slightly different.
I have made it one of my ambitions to go across the world traveling and to go to a gun range and try out some things just to see if I can still do it all from my time in the military. But yeah, the Thompson bolt.
Well, come visit and I'll take you and we'll go.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I go to shoot my pistol once a month or so.
Okay.
100 okay. bullets. Each time.
Good.
Thankfully, I've never had to really use it. I don't want to ever have to really use it. Use it in a gun range. That's it. But it's nice to have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it goes back to my favorite quote from True Romance, where Christian Slater's character says, Clarence, he says, better to have a gun and not need it than to need a gun and not have it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've used that in many, many different circumstances, I believe.
Understandable. Understandable. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And at this point, we see that Spear shows up.
Yes.
And
Dog Company. He goes,
Winters, Hester said you needed ammo. And Winters goes, malarkey. And first of all, Spears has so much ammo on him.
Yeah. He's not messing around.
No. He's carrying a Thompson, and he has his bullets for the heavy machine gun on him.
Yeah.
He doesn't even have a heavy machine gun, but
That must be what, 30 cal? Must be 30 cal for the Browning, for the
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then at this point they just say to everyone, okay, take as much as you can, everybody. load up on, again, it's reminiscent of the moment on Omaha Beach when they tell everyone to go get ammo from all the dead and dying. you know, taking forever. But here at least, you know, someone's brought them the ammo.
That type Absolutely. Of
thing. And then Spear goes, "You mind if D Company takes a shot at the next gun?" It goes, "All yours." He goes, "Let's go, Dog Company. Up and at 'em, D Company." And he just gets up and just runs through the whole thing. And again, we're going to see this much, much more later on, you know, when Spears does eventually become the, you know, the commander of Easy. But, you know, he is the most gung-ho person around, even more than Winters.
Easily.
He does. And he just runs through the, you know, he starts running through the trench, and then he sees that there are men in his way, and he just gets out of the trench and starts running around the trench.
I'm very confused by this entire thing. his helmet's gone. We have no idea what's happened here.
Yes.
Now, I know he was joined by, I believe, five more members of Dog Company, but they're not really mentioned as much. I don't really see much about them. Because obviously the emphasis was on
Easy. Well, again, the emphasis is on Spears at this point.
Yeah.
You know, we just saw a few days ago Spears, you know, shoot a whole bunch of prisoners, or it's assumed that he
we'll call it allegedly an alleged war crime. Yeah.
Exactly.
But he's a bit of an adrenaline junkie, is Ronald Spears, I would have thought. He tends to go, and yeah, why they got out of the trench is anyone's idea. I don't know. I really don't know. They obviously weren't, as you say, they probably weren't moving quickly enough for him, but then they all got out after him, which you then wonder, you know, what are you doing?
Okay, well, again, in the book, they do mention about Spears. They say reinforcements arrived. Five men led by Lieutenant Ronald Spears of D Company. Mm-hmm. One of them, Rusty Hooch of F Company, raised up to throw a grenade into the gun positions and was hit several times across the back and shoulders by a burst from a machine gun. He died instantly. Spears led an attack on the final gun, which he took and destroyed, losing two men killed.
Okay.
So, you know, you were wondering what happens to the men.
Yeah.
And, you know, what happens to the men that went with Spears. So apparently two of them were killed. I don't know if that includes Hooch or not. You know, the count.
It's definitely, it's really indicative of the different ways in which men command and the ways in which the different companies approach things. Mm-hmm. You know, because as far as we've seen so far, Winters and Easy Company have been very methodical, and lots of communication, and, you know, using tried and tested maneuvers, and then just carnage ensues because Dog Company turn up and just do things as they see fit, you know, which, you know, to me, it's very confusing as to why they would do that. But,
well, again, what the ironic thing is that eventually Spears becomes the commander of Easy Company with, you know, even though he and Winters lead differently, but the important thing is they both lead.
Yes.
You know, we're going to see a whole bunch of other commanders along the way that don't lead. And that's why Spears takes over. You know, when you have Foxhole Norman and all them, you know, so it makes sense that they finally get Spears, who's going to you know, to continue to lead the men like Winters would have done. You know, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I love the value of the men.
That's right. I love, as this is all going on, so we sort of get a commentary from both Buck and Winters. You know, Buck goes, "Who is that? Spears?" And he goes, "What's he doing out of the trench?" He goes, "Oh, what the hell is he doing?" He goes, "Oh, Jesus."
It shows that it's definitely not the way they would have done it.
Right. And Lipton then shows up next to Winters, and he goes, "Sir, I had a little trouble getting through the first field." He goes, "Oh, Christ, we're going to need it at the next gun." He goes, "Well, once it's blown, tell him to pull out. Go." So he's basically sending him with the TNT because they no longer have Paul to take care of it.
He looks genuinely crestfallen. Donnie Wahlberg looks genuinely crestfallen that he's made it all the way through. You can tell he's running on empty or adrenaline or whatever it is. And he's just, and then Winters is just calmly telling him, go on, next one, keep going. You're doing well, keep going.
That's right. And then Winters gives some orders to Compton, and he goes, Compton, police them both, then pull out. Lorraine, Toy, move out. And he starts running, and he goes, move out, move out, move it out. And he's saying this as he's running through the trench, shooting on both sides. And then he goes, MGs first, machine guns, right?
Yes.
He goes, fall back to the original positions.
Original positions, yeah. Okay.
He passed the guys as he's passing them and stuff like that, giving the instructions as to what needs to be done. And they just want everyone, okay, we're basically, we've done what we need to do. Let's retreat. We don't need to lose any more men here and stuff like that.
Yeah, because it was a stronger
And
force than originally anticipated there as well.
that's right.
So.
And then he ends up jumping on top of he gets out of the trench, and he screams, fall back to your original positions, everyone else maintain their base of fire. He goes, okay, back to battalion, go go. And then as he gets up, he sees a German running towards him, and he shoots the German dead center as he then runs off back towards battalion now that they've completed their mission. So
Yeah.
I like the way that they this was our mission. We've done the mission. We're not going to stick around. We're moving back. That type of thing.
Yes. Yeah. I like the fact that that does show the reality of it. It's not just a battle that just starts and stops. There's always going to be something else going on in the background. So.
Exactly. Exactly. And then the shot changes, and we're back at the battalion headquarters, and we see the men walking through, including Winters. They pass a guy. We talked about this a long time ago, during the second episode, about the idea of the men giving themselves mohawks. So they pass a
Yes.
guy who does have a mohawk. And then Winters is walking, talking to both Colonel Strayer, and I believe the other one's supposed to be Major Horton, even though we never see, there's no credit for Major Horton, so I don't know who it is that he's talking to.
No.
And he's basically giving a report, and he goes, well, they weren't 105, they were 105s, not 88s, sir. We disabled them and pulled out. I figure there's maybe 40 or so Krauts still manning three MG42s to the rear. And as he's giving this report, they walk by with a stretcher with Popeye,
With
on his stomach. And he goes, hey, Popeye.
So I
And
think that's the captain that was in the Captain Hester. I think that's
maybe.
Captain Hester that was in the that came into the trenches and he was asking for ammo. I think that's him.
Okay, it is possible. I mean, again, there is a character who they refer to all the time, but we never get to see him.
No.
Major Horton,
Ollie
Major Horton, we
Horton.
never see throughout the whole
Yeah.
thing. We just hear about him, and then when he eventually gets killed, we hear that he was killed, and that was it.
Yes.
They don't give us anything beyond that.
And that's the one that George Lust does the impersonation of, isn't it? Does he do
That's right.
Major Horton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does Major Horton at the I mean we had that in the first episode, in the
The
first
barbed wire
in the
fence,
first
yeah.
part where they were dealing with the barbed wire fence, yeah. But I mean the character who's listed here, it's very interesting because what did we say his name was?
Hester, Captain Hester.
Hester. So the there's a character named Clarence Hester.
Ah, yeah.
who's in both this episode and or this part two, and also in part five, Dream Crossroads. But I
Okay.
don't know if this is supposed to be the same person or not, because he's not listed as Captain Hester. He's just listed as Clarence Hester. So it is possible that he is one of the men. I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I'm not sure about. No, in the book it mentions Captain Hester, but it
Okay.
never mentions anything about I mean, he is mentioned a little bit later on also. And at another point, he's referred to as Lieutenant Hester.
Oh.
So, and then there's a Major Hester.
Okay.
So maybe that. So I guess he continues moving up in rank throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because he eventually is Lieutenant Colonel Hester.
Okay.
Right, Major Clarence Hester. Okay, there you
Right.
go. So
So
yeah,
that's where
so
we first see
it
him.
is Clarence. Yes, it is Clarence Hester.
Cool.
Okay.
And
So
then the intelligence turns up.
yes, exactly. But first of all, I wanted to mention I love mentioning this fact that Winters knows his men. He's
Yeah.
familiar with each of the men and things like that. Unlike what we saw with Sobel and things like that the fact that Popeye goes by and he refers to him as Popeye.
Yeah.
Which again is great. That's the way it should be. A commander should know all of the men under their command. They should be able to
Absolutely.
they have to know who's good at what and who can do what, if you need someone to do a specific task, you need to be able to know who to call on,
Yeah.
because you want to have the best person to do it, that type of thing.
Yeah, so
But
I
we saw
missed
with
you.
Sobel that he didn't,
Yeah. And you see these types of leaders in reality, as you will have seen yourself, Rob, and I saw in my time in the Air Force, there were leaders that you wouldn't follow to water if you were already stood in it. This was this was just the way some leaders were. And I believe it's Lipton that said, later on, that it's not that he makes poor decisions or good decisions, it's because he doesn't make any decisions. And
Okay,
that,
no, but that was talking about Foxhole Norman.
yeah, but that's indicative of what type of leader that guy was.
Yeah, for sure.
And
For sure.
I've seen leaders throughout my time, and I did a lot of work on leadership before I was promoted, and just after I was promoted during my time in. And the difference between a boss and a leader used to come up quite often. It would be a case of a boss would say, "You go and do that," and a leader would say, "Let's go and do that."
That's right.
Very, of it's a very small difference, but it means a lot to the guys that you're there with, as they say,
Of
where the
course.
rubber meets the road.
That's right. I mean, I've mentioned this numerous times about Sobel, that Sobel was a great instructor, but a terrible leader.
Yes.
That's the thing. And when you talk about Winters, you get something completely different. He was a leader by example.
Yes.
And he knew what he was doing and knew how to he knew where the fine line was between being a leader and also being friendly with the men, that type of thing.
Absolutely. Quite agree.
So yeah, and then one of that we hear a soldier scream, "Watch it!" And then Hester says back to Winters, he goes, "40?" He goes, "Yes, sir. We killed maybe around 20, so yeah, probably there's about 40 left. Because I think we need artillery, or maybe mortars might do the job." And as they continue walking along, we see numerous vehicles show up, including a tank.
Yeah.
Which it always reminds me of Kelly's Heroes, when you
Thank
see
God.
men riding on a tank that way.
Less
Now, I just
mention
found
of
it
them
really
negative
funny.
waves, Moriarty.
That's right. I mean, there's a jeep that goes by that is also jam-packed with men. But the idea I just find it very funny that Winters is right now giving both Strayer and Hester an update on things, and right in the middle, he's just gonna abandon them because Nixon shows up with a tank and goes, "Going my way?" And he goes, "Sure."
Yeah.
There's something in the way of command that's a little strange from that. And then he just looks over at Hester and goes, "Sir." And then Nixon says, "Careful, don't hurt yourself." He goes, "Nice ride you got here, Nix." He goes, "Straight from Utah Beach. We should put them to work before they're missed."
Better late than never, huh?
Exactly.
And the bloodbath that they drive through. When I first
Seriously.
saw that, I was really sort of, I sat and I thought, what was that? And then I thought back to when they first arrived and they turned up, coming up the hill, the same sort of hill area, and the road was littered with livestock, horses, cows, things like that, that had been essentially barricaded on the road. So that must have been that cleared, and then the tanks driving through it later on, and just the blood remains, which is, well, visceral to say the least, isn't it?
Okay, but it is what's really going on.
It is, yeah.
They want us to see that not everything here is as white as snow, I guess you can say. There's stuff that happens here that probably shouldn't have happened,
Yeah.
and but there's not much that can really be done
This is true.
from that perspective. Yeah, it's so at this point, they let us see the tanks roll by, and we follow the tanks a little bit, and then there's a fade to black, and they do a really nice job of changing the scene, to show us a war memorial from World War One.
Yeah, very poignant, isn't it?
And then we see the men all sitting around. We get a voiceover from Winters, and he goes, "By nightfall, 2nd Battalion had secured Saint Marie Dumont, and elements of the 4th Division were beginning to move men and material inland." And at this point, we see someone being, treated for wounds, on stretchers, screaming a little bit. And then Winters continues, and he goes, "Most of the 101st Airborne, including Easy Company, were still scattered all over Normandy, and the success of the invasion was far from certain. We had an hour to rest and scrounge whatever food we could before we had to move south and secure the town of Corville." And the we see a truck pass through the whole thing. And again, they give us a nice impression that these men have really taken over this little town.
Yes. I got a question for you, Rob.
Sure.
War memorials. I mean, where I come from and my, I mean, I'm fifth, sixth generation military, probably at least, long and proud history in the military. However, war memorials to me are sacred. But then, is it a kind of a bit of a paradox here because their soldiers stood at the bottom of it, smoking and chatting and resting and doing all that stuff? But it's on a war memorial. I mean, me personally, I always sort of, I almost take offense to people doing anything around a war memorial that isn't commemorating that war.
Okay, but are you talking about a war memorial that is in like a cemetery or any type of
Not
memorial?
any and anyone, because this one's obviously in the town square, as a lot of war memorials are around Europe and probably America and everywhere else. But the way I was brought up was always it's quite disrespectful if you do anything like that around a war memorial, even if it's soldiers. I don't know whether that's something that's just me or, yeah.
Well, we do know that the American soldiers didn't always act completely properly.
No.
And remember, these aren't career military men. These are, teenagers who were either drafted or they were drafted and then volunteered for airborne. So, and what we see through the course of this entire miniseries that there are things that some of these guys do that completely goes against what you would think they need to do.
Absolutely.
So yeah.
It is the fade in is fantastic though. I've got to agree.
Yes. Yeah.
It is so well done. And
Yeah,
the
I love the transition. Yes.
And the shock that these guys show when there's still injured troops coming in, these guys will have all seen it face to face, and still that look of surprise or that look of here we go again, where more wounded turn up to be treated. A lot must go through their heads.
Exactly. And we see how crowded this little town is, and then we see a truck which has a hole in the ceiling with a little bit of, you can see that there's a fire going on inside, and we hear someone inside say, "I don't want to die in the back of this damn truck," is what? And he goes, "Come on, you're stepping on my legs." He goes, "Jesus, let me out of here." Then we hear Compton say, "Light, light discipline. Garnier, close that flap."
Joe got can't take anymore, so he's left.
Exactly. And then they close the flap, and then Garnier says, "Let the crowds cook their own goddamn food." "How we doing, Malark?" He goes, "We're doing good. Doing good, yeah." He goes, "What do you know about cooking? You're Irish." And he goes, "If you have a reservation someplace else," he goes, "just start dishing it out." He goes, "Thank you."
They're old.
We see that they're cooking in an ammo can.
Yes.
That probably was holding 30 caliber bullets
Good old
or something
ammo
like
tin rations. I like it.
that. That's right. And the fact that they're cooking it, on a little fire inside of a truck is just great.
Well,
Then
it's a
they
great
hit
way of
court, we see
maintaining
the
life
slop.
discipline.
That's right. Makes you wonder what they're eating. I don't even want to know, but it's just complete slop.
No, I mean our ration packs were always pretty good, but I wouldn't have wanted to know what that is.
No. And then he pours onto one that's like a tin plate. He goes, "Thank you." And he goes, "Oh, shit."
Even the sound of that getting poured out, it does not make it all that appetizing to me.
No. But again, you also have to take into consideration they've now been 24 hours in the heat of battle, and
True.
must be nice and hungry at this point.
I think Lipton's face in there shows probably the best emotion out of all of it, because he looks genuinely concerned about what's in that
Probably, yes.
He sort of starts off with his eyes wide and then scrunches his face as if to go, "What the hell even is that?" But yeah, I like it.
Got it. And then we get a shot of Winters still walking through this little village as 5 minute segment ends. So is there anything else you wanted to discuss about this 5 minute segment?
Not this one, no.
All right. So today's special segment is World War II movie trivia. So we're going to be testing we're going to be testing how well you know World War II movie trivia, and who knows, maybe you'll get questions related to you.
Oh, I didn't do well last time, so let's find out.
Well, you never know. Again, the last time it wasn't World War II stuff. So, I'm trying to remember what the questions were with Die Hard at that point. I don't remember what they were.
Ooh.
It was too far. The season was far longer ago.
Go back and listen. We'll go back and listen another time.
All right. So you will now get 5 questions. So let's spin the wheel and see. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Let's see what question that you're going to get. Okay. Which classic World War II film features a team of Allied prisoners of war, including William Holden, who are forced to build a railroad bridge for their Japanese captors?
Oh, that would be Bridge Over the River Kwai, Rob.
Yes, it would be. Excellent.
Okay, that's all right. A good start.
See? There you go. And again, this is all random. I'm not choosing what you get. You know, otherwise you get like 5 Great Escape questions. You know, if I was choosing.
A bit like Mastermind, my chosen subject. Really.
Well, okay, this one is going to be a little more difficult for you. I can already tell you that in advance.
Okay.
I actually just recently saw it and really enjoyed it for the first time.
Right.
Okay, it's a movie from 1959. Okay, and the name of the movie is General Della Rovere. Okay, and the main character, whose name is Bardone, is arrested by the Gestapo and coerced into impersonating who in order to expose the resistance.
Well, I can quite honestly say I have no idea.
Okay. He's supposed to impersonate a partisan leader.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Okay. And that movie actually also features Hans Messermer. Messermer.
Oh, really?
Hans Messermer. Yes, it does. Mm. Yes, he plays Colonel Mueller.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's the Great Escape connection. There.
Great Escape link. Everything's connected to the Great Escape, surely.
Pretty much. Yeah. Sure. All right, let's spin the wheel once again and see what your next question is. Okay, you see, this proves how random it is. All right.
Right.
Who is the main actor in the 1997 movie Life is Beautiful?
Oh. Yeah, we were just talking about this.
Yesterday, yes.
Oh. Right, let's see if I can remember my questions. I'm trying to go back over my questions now. Life is beautiful, life is beautiful, life is beautiful. So it was a Italian, did you say it was Italian family?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I want to say Roberto something.
Okay, yeah, very good, very good, very good.
I don't know.
So it's Roberto Benigni.
Roberto Benigni, of course, right, okay. Yes.
But again, that's great. You remember the name Roberto.
I got there.
You get credit for that. You definitely get the credit. It can't be everything is so simple. So that's fine.
Well, it's true.
Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. All right. So let's spin the wheel once again for your fourth question. Round and around the wheel goes. And let's see what you get. Okay, in the 1958 movie The Young Lions, who plays the main German soldier?
The Young Lions? I can honestly say I haven't seen it. 1958. I'm just trying to think of big movie actors from the 1950s. But
okay, you're going in the right direction.
Okay. Who would I have? Who would I have in my movie? 1958, you say?
1958, yes.
And it would be, who played the main German, did you say?
Yes. The actor is not a German actor, it's an American actor.
Oh, so 50s actors, late 50s. What's that, a time of the Brat Pack, maybe? The Rat Pack, sorry. Not the Brat Pack, what are we talking about? The Rat Pack.
He is not a member of the Brat Pack.
Dean Martin.
First of all, Dean Martin is one of the three main characters here, but he's an American. So, you know what? I'm going to give you credit for that one.
Okay.
The fact that you knew that Dean Martin was here. Yeah. So
by process of elimination.
That's right. The two Americans are played by Montgomery Clift and Dean Martin, and the German is played by Marlon Brando.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That's another one I've got to add to my list now. So let's...
There you go. See, I'm glad I'm able to help you with adding to your list.
The Young Lions. Okay.
Yes. All right. So now let's spin the wheel for your final question.
Ooh.
Maybe it'll be a Great Escape question. Who knows?
Be bad if I got it wrong then.
Okay. Who plays the lead character in the 1949 film The Sands of Iwo Jima?
Oh, no.
Think war movie from 1949. Who would you have as your main character?
49.
Yes. He's a very famous actor from that time.
I think he's 40.
He plays Sergeant John Stryker.
See, I know the name. I mean, if I was to put anyone out there for acting in a war movie, like Jimmy Stewart, maybe?
You're on the right track. It's not Jimmy Stewart.
Sorry, clicking my pen. I get distracted. Bogart. Humphrey Bogart.
No.
You're going to have to tell me.
He won an Oscar 20 years later for playing a bounty hunter in a Western.
Bounty hunter in a Western. 20 years later, so what's that, 68?
Six, 69, I believe he won. He won the Oscar.
Bounty
He's a very famous actor who plays many soldiers or cowboys. His first name is John.
John Wayne?
Yes.
You're joking. Sounds, of course it was. Oh, my God.
That's okay.
There, Rob.
That's fine. You did quite well. You did quite well. All right. So now let's play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's,
okay.
Spin the wheel and hope that it's one of the other movies that we've talked about.
Yeah.
Okay. This World War II movie came out in 1963.
Great Escape.
That's right.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. It really did come up. It's completely 100%, 1,000% random, and it really came up.
Well,
I was about to say that it just missed it because I saw that it was going around the wheel, and it was like it was moving towards the next movie, but then it stopped. So, you know, what better person for that to stop by?
What are the odds, indeed? I would like to know. That's great.
Exactly.
One of the only war movies I do remember from 1963, or I've ever watched from 1963, but there you go.
There you go. That's why I felt that I didn't need to go into that much detail.
Thanks, Rob.
All right. You have to thank the wheel of fate.
Absolutely. The wheel of fate.
It was not me. It really wasn't. I know that people out there are probably not going to believe me, but I don't care. I know I have a clear conscience because it's true.
I trust you 100%, Rob.
I'm glad, right? See, you see my face. You know that I'm, you know, I'm
this
telling
is
the
it.
truth here.
This is it.
That's right. Okay, so Patty, would you like to tell people where they can find you?
You can find me on normal social media, Paddy Flint, or where we have recorded a wonderful podcast on For You the War Is Over, called For You the War Is Over, where we're talking about the Great Escape Investigations.
All right. Excellent. I'm looking forward to hearing that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, everyone, have a great weekend. Patty and I will be back on Monday. He's decided to stick around for the weekend. But on Monday, he and I will be back to finish up talking about the part two of Phantom Wars. So, until then, hurry!
Hurry!